some bad weather conditions. If you have any sort of meeting or activity planned at church, please be sure to call ahead and make sure the office is open. And if you are in charge of a group that is meeting on Tuesday, please have a way of communicating with your members to let them know if your meeting is on or off. And also, the Taste of Hope is this week, Thursday, at Thunder Bay Grill. This is the Hope Center fundraiser designed with Le Coux in mind. Great beer, wine, and food, and fabulous prizes. Please come and see Eric Larson for details.
Here we have come into this sacred space, quieter now with our readiness, hushed voices hoping and trusting for so many things, for connection, for communion, for inspiration, for information, for healing, for wholeness, for words and music, for celebration and consolation. Here we have come into this space bringing all of who we are. Let us be willing however we are changed. Come and let us worship here together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your nearest neighbors.
Deep calls unto deep, joy calls unto joy, light calls unto light. Let the kindling of this flame rekindle in us the inner light of love, of peace, of hope. And as one flame lights another, nor grows the less, we pledge ourselves to be bearers of the light wherever we are. Please rise in body or spirit and join me in singing our opening hymn, number 348, Guide My Feet. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Amy, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you are welcome here. We welcome those who have known nothing but acceptance in their lives and those who have known the pain of exclusion and suffered disdain for their differences. LCUUC is a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, which means we welcome and affirm all people, regardless of who they love or what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service, and while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. To stay current on services, events, and activities, please check our webpage at lcuuc.org and like and follow us on Facebook. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics you may have here with you today. We are glad that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us.
Thank you.
Here at LCUUC, we try to always remember that we are part of a greater community. And one of the ways that we take care of ourselves and our neighbors is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we gather and donate each month. So if you have brought food items to share, please feel free to bring them forward or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And I ask that the children stay up front and enjoy a story. And today's story is called Everybody Needs a Rock. And it is by Bird Baylor with pictures by Peter Parnell. Everybody needs a rock. You can see the picture there. It's a very large elephant. Everybody needs a rock. I'm sorry for kids who don't have a rock for a friend. I'm sorry for kids who only have tricycles and bicycles and horses and elephants and goldfish and three-room playhouses and fire engines and wind-up dragons and things like that. If they don't have a rock for a friend, I feel sorry for them. She's got an elephant. That's why I'm giving them my own 10 rules for finding a rock. Laying there thinking about it. Not just any rock. I mean a special rock that you find yourself and you keep as long as you can, maybe for forever. If somebody says, "What's so special about that rock?" don't even tell them. I don't tell them. Nobody is supposed to know what is special about another person's rock. All right, here are the rules. So are you ready for these 10 rules? Rule number one, if you can go out to a mountain made of 100 million small, shiny, beautiful, round rocks, that's good. Do it if you can. But if you can't, I'll tell you a secret. Any place is good enough. Any place will do, even an alley, even a sandy road, even the parking lot outside. And there she is out in the middle of a desert. Rule number two, when you're looking at rocks, and this is important, don't let your mom or your dad or your sister or your brothers or your best friend talk to you. And see them sitting out there by themselves. You should choose a rock when everything is quiet. Don't let dogs bark at you or bees buzz at you. But if they do, don't worry. The worst thing you can do is go rock hunting when you're worried. Rule number three. Bend over. More. Even more. You may have to sit on the ground with your head almost touching the earth. So she's kind of sitting like this, looking at the rocks. You have to look your rock right in the eye. Otherwise, don't blame me if you can't find a good one. Rule number four, don't get a rock that's too big. What do you think of the size of that rock? Think your mom and dad would like you to take that one home? No. You'll always be sorry if you get a big rock. It won't fit in your hand and it won't fit in your pocket. A rock as big as an apple is too big. A rock as big as a horse is much too big. Rule number five. And this one's important. Don't choose a rock that's too small. It'll be easy to lose, or a mouse might eat it thinking that it's a seed. Believe me, that happened to a boy in the state of Arizona. And there's the mouse eating his rock. Rule number 6, the size of your rock has to be perfect for you. It has to feel easy in your hand when you close your fingers over it. It has to feel jumpy in your pocket when you run. It has to be your rock, perfect for you. Some people touch a rock 1,000 times a day. There aren't many things that feel as good as a rock if a rock is perfect for you. There she is, touching her rock, playing with the rocks. Rule number 7, look for the perfect color. That could be a sort of pinkish gray with bits of silver in it. Some rocks that look brown are really other colors, but you only see them when you squint when the sun's right. Another way to see colors is to dip your rock in a mountain stream if one happens to be passing by, or in the water in your bathroom, or in your sink. Look at your rock. It's yours. Rule number 8, the shape of the rock is up to you. There's a girl in Alaska who only likes flat rocks. Don't ask me why. I like them lumpy. But the thing to remember about shape is this. Any rock looks good with 100 other rocks around it on a hill. But if your rock is going to be special, it should look good all by itself in the middle of the bathtub. Rule number 9. See what you think about this one. Always sniff a rock. Rocks have their own smells. Some kids tell by sniffing whether a rock came from the middle of the earth or from an ocean or from a mountain where wind and sun touched it every day for 1,000,000 years. I'll tell you a secret. Grown-ups can't tell this stuff. But you can tell. It's too bad for them that they just can't smell as well as kids can. This is a picture of what she thinks her rock smells like. Rule number 10. And this is another important one. Don't let anybody else help you choose. I've seen a lizard pick one rock out of a desert full of rocks and go sit there all alone. I've seen a snail pass up 20 rocks and spend all day getting to the one he wanted. You have to make up your own mind. You'll just know. All right, that's 10 rules. If you think of any more, write them down yourself. I'm going out to play a game that takes me just one rock. I happen to have a rock here right in my hand. So think about it. Find yourself a rock. Thank you all for listening to my story. And can I have my lantern bearer? May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day. And if you all would follow Caleb to your classes, and if you would help me sing the children out, the words are in your order of service. A priest, a UU minister, and a rabbi were talking about their hopes and their dreams over a few drinks, and each revealed that they wanted to be the greatest cleric the world had ever seen. So they decided they would go into the woods and each find a bear and attempt to convert it. The winner would be the one whose bear did the best. The next morning they got together again, and the priest said, "I found a bear, and I read to him from the catechism, and I sprinkled him with holy water. Next week I've scheduled him for a first communion. He's a Catholic. I win." The UU minister had a black eye and a few scratches. "You call that a win," he said. "I spent an hour telling my bear about social justice and building your own theology, and then he signed up for a march, and we got into a fist fight over some coffee. He's a UU. I totally win." They both looked down at the rabbi, who was lying on a gurney in a body cast. "Looking back," the rabbi said thoughtfully, "looking back, maybe I shouldn't have started with the circumcision." So that we can continue to share our hopes without any bears whatsoever involved. The morning offering will now be given and received. Thank you so much for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of our community. This is the time in our service where we share together our joys and our concerns. Before the service, you're always welcome to come up and silently light a candle at the table. But during the service, we share together, we speak aloud, and we light candles as a group. So would anyone who has a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand. And the ushers will bring you a microphone. Please make sure to hold it clearly to your mouth.
This is Lynn, a candle of concern for Ben Jaskat, a beautiful 26-year-old young man who grew up with my son and who died of overdose this week, and for all those struggling with addiction.
Hi, my name is Dave, and I had a conversation with a student as the first semester ended. He was going home for the long weekend, and didn't have a whole lot to look forward to at home. So this is a candle of concern for those kids who don't have the best home lives.
Hi, my name is Heather. Please light a candle of concern for a student of mine who is trying to deal with coping with his older brother being diagnosed with terminal cancer.
Hello, this is Al. Two candles, if I might. One, a candle of joy. In just a few hours, Karen and I will turn 29. And also a second candle of hope that she'll continue to put up with me.
Hello, this is John. Just I'd like a candle of joy in that I finally get to experience what it is to be an empty nester since my 21-year-old's now going down to UW-Milwaukee and he's moving into his apartment today.
And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows which we hold deeply, but which we have not named here today.
A traditional reading of Psalm 121, read by Jews and Christians. I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. Here ends the first reading.
A non-traditional reading of Psalm 121. I look up at all the things I see as more powerful than me. Who's going to help me? My help comes from those around me, those with more power, those who control and shape the world that I live in. They won't let me fall. They won't look away while I vanish into nothingness. I believe, I have to believe, that they won't ignore me or help to harm me. Those with more power are here to help those with less power, to protect them from the fire of injustice, to protect them from the open hatred that shows itself in daylight, and the sneaking, subtle evil that operates in the dark. The spirit of humanity we share will guide the strong to support the weak, to guard all life as if it were their own. Our connections, one to another, are my hope, now and forevermore. Here ends the first reading. Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
The following reading is a group of linked excerpts from a sermon delivered by William F. Schultz, former head of Amnesty International and former president of the UUA. When we consider the broader human enterprise, the shape of history, I think there is a 60 to 40 case to be made for hope, for the possibility that the human spirit is not inevitably tainted by ignorance or ignominy. A few months after the horrendous genocide in Rwanda, a team of so-called reconciliation experts went to that tattered country to help the Tutsi, 800,000 of whom had just been slaughtered by members of the Hutu tribe, to begin the process of healing and forgiveness. For several hours, the experts conducted their training, inviting members of the village from different tribes to share their feelings with one another. But finally, one of the village elders said, "You know, all this is good, but what we really need in this village is a bus." The reconciliation experts were taken aback. "Yes," they said, "perhaps the village does need a bus, but we are here to talk about far more serious things than that." But the elder persisted. "We need a bus," he said. And soon all the villagers were chanting, "A bus, a bus." Finally, one of the women in the group explained. "We need a bus," she said, "that will start its route in the Hutu part of the region and then drive to the Pygmy part and then to the Tutsi part and then back again, and we want to design the seats of the bus so that all seats face one another, and we want to have a rule that no one may sit beside a person from their own tribe, and we want to have conductors who one day are Hutu, and the next day are Pygmy, and the next day are Tutsi. And by the way, we want all the conductors to be women. We need not be hopeless, my friends, for the sweep of history carries promise of our redemption, powered as it is, sustained as it is, by both the uncanny and the commonplace, by both resilience and compassion. Those are the reasons for hope. That is why I have chosen not to give up on the human project. Faithful, relentless hope, coming into life again like April. We need a bus. 60 to 40 may not be the best odds in the world, but when you consider what we're up against, I think they're odds worth taking. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 100, "I've Got Peace Like a River."
the end of my sermon, I'd like to do a brief polylogue about where it is that you find hope and what gives you hope. In June of 1972, a guy named Johnny Nash wrote a song that kind of came out of nowhere, and suddenly it was everywhere. And it seemed like you couldn't hear it without singing along. And let's see how many of you know this one. I can see clearly now, the rain has gone. And it was a happy, poppy little song. I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's going to be a bright, bright, sunshiny day. After years of Vietnam, this was what people wanted to hear. This was hope. It's going to be a bright day. It's going to be okay. I can see a way forward. The song started out slow, and then it shot to number one on the charts by the first week in November. I do remember hearing my dad moaning about how soppy the whole thing was and mumbling every time it came on, but most people just darn liked it. You sang along. If you had asked me in 1972 what I thought hope was, I would have told you that it meant everything would be fine. That's what hope is. Everything's going to be okay. It was the ultimate get out of jail free card. It meant that a kid with no money could hope that they would get the four-story Barbie dream house magically deposited on their front steps. It meant the mom trying to raise four kids said, "You know what? You know what? I have a pitiful job and I don't have enough, but I'm going to make this work. Groceries will get here. I'll get the rent paid. It'll be okay." Hope was like magic. It was a belief that no matter what, the good guys would win. Hope let me know that King Kong would lose to the airplanes, that the Easter Bunny would show up with candy. And even though I hadn't studied for a test, it would miraculously be over the very things that I remembered best from class. That's hope. Years later, as an adult, when I read a Terry Pratchett book called Hogfather, which is his take on Christmas, I realized how very much my idea of hope was tied into all the myth-making that goes into childhood. In Hogfather, Death is a character. And at one point, he is talking to Susan, his adopted granddaughter. He's very pleasant. And Susan doesn't like all of the foolishness that goes with childhood, all of the stories. And she tells him so, and Death argues that it is essential. Here's part of their conversation. See what you think. "All right," said Susan, "I'm not stupid. You're saying that humans need this, fantasies, to make life bearable." "Really?" said Death. "As if it were some kind of pink pill you took?" "No. Humans need fantasy to be human, to be the place where the falling angel meets the rising ape." "Tooth fairies?" said Susan. "Yes," said Death, "as practice. You have to start out learning to believe the little lies." "What, so we can believe the big ones?" "Yes. Justice. Mercy. Hope. Duty. That sort of thing." "But that's not the same at all." "You think so? Then take the universe and grind it down to the finest powder. Sieve it through the finest sieve and then show me one atom of justice, one molecule of mercy, and yet there is some ideal order in the world. There is some rightness in the universe by which it may be judged." "Yes," said Susan, "but people have got to believe, or what's the point?" "My point exactly," said Death. Hope wasn't always accurate. Sometimes the Barbie house didn't show, and sometimes the test didn't go well. Sometimes hope was the little lie that helped to bridge the gap between what you had and what you wanted. It was a belief that the universe was essentially skewed in your favor. Eventually, I decided that hope was less of a constant companion and more of a visitor. It took time off and went and hung out in other places. A favorite adult moved away. A friend's brother died in a car accident. Hope wasn't around that day. Another friend died in a gun accident, and hope was there, but wasn't strong enough. So what does hope mean for us today? We're way beyond the get-out-of-jail-free card. As adults, we tend to make our hopes pretty specific. Boy, I hope that isn't a police car. Boy, I hope I wasn't speeding. Boy, I hope my husband has a sense of humor about this ticket. We hope that our medicine won't cost too much or that lunch won't burn while we finish a report. We hope a friend gets over the flu quickly. For many people, I hope has come to be the same trivial expression as I wish. We're not brave enough to be that four-year-old going, I hope I get the Barbie dream house. But when we think about hope as something not trivial, not as something that comes and goes or something that can be lost for good, but as a religious concept, then it regains importance. Then it goes back to being one of those big concepts that we have to believe in order to be human. Hope as a function of our humanity is more than wishing for a new boat or a raise at work. It's not a Hallmark moment or a cheesy song. It's not a cliche dredged from the bowels of It's a Wonderful Life and Pollyanna, I hope it's all going to be wonderful. Hope isn't meaningless. It isn't the Lifetime original movie of lies or a sentimental tearjerker. We need hope to be human. And we have hope because we are that place where the falling angel meets the rising ape. Hope is a potential. Hope is a potential based on a bone-deep awareness that we are part of a whole. Hope is a realization that all of life is one thing and that we are directly connected to all possible things. We are a part of something that cannot, will not let us go. And in that web of life, all things are possible, and so we hope. Think about it just for a minute. Hope is potential, based on the understanding that you are part of a web that connects you to all possible outcomes. Hope is the sure and certain knowledge that you, as you are with everything you've done, everything you haven't done, you already have a place in a complex scheme of existence that would not and could not be the same without you. Hope says that all things are possible because you are already connected to all things possible. Connected doesn't mean certain. Hope is never certain. But when I have lost hope, it has been because my sense of that connection has been temporarily broken. February 2nd will be the 11th anniversary of my baby sister's death. And when she died, I was the first medical responder there. And I couldn't save her. And for a few moments, it felt like all hope was gone. And I stood out on her back porch looking at the Kentucky hills while the EMTs tried their best. And the first lines to Psalm 121 kept running through my head. I will lift up my eyes to the hills. Where will my help come from? And for a minute, I felt totally disconnected from all hope. And then her three-year-old came out looking for me. And I realized that though life had changed forever, hope wasn't gone. Hope was right there in front of me in a little pair of pink pajamas. Hope was right there. Hope was there to tell me that life would go on, that I was still connected, that there would be another way, a different way, but a way forward. Hope lives in every reminder that we can do something, that we are not trapped. Hope lives every time we see a baby born or a wave roll in. Hope is the reminder that yes, yes, we belong to this life, and yes, we are welcome, and yes, we have a place. We're not mistakes. Hope is created in every bond that we forge, every relationship we nurture. And I never thought I'd say this in a UU church, but in the words of Oral Roberts, hope is the fact that something good is going to happen to you today. Hope lives as we mindfully recognize we are not alone. Reverend Kit Ketchum said, if religion is defined as the expression of human relationship with self, with others, and with the universe, then hope is a manifestation of that relationship and a valuable piece of our active faith. Unitarian Universalists mostly do not hope for a heavenly home. We hope for an earthly home that is heavenly, and we know that that is our job. A woman I was friends with in the 80s named Emily Louise told me a story once of how she came to hold her current job. At 19, she became a nun. When I met her, she was in her late 50s or early 60s. And so for the very few of you who are not up on your sacred orders, the Society of St. Margaret, which she joined, wears the full gray robes and the full head coverings. And they used to wear a rope belt. And at the side of that belt hung a bag down your hip filled with sewing equipment because they were the sewing sisters. And it included a pair of long sewing shears. But Emily Louise was, in her own words, a klutz with a temper. She actually tripped over her habit more often than she wore it well. She got her hair tangled in her head covering, which fell off again and again in public. She got into trouble everywhere she went. By 25, she was angry and depressed, without hope, sure she had ruined her life. During another argument with her supervisor, she yanked her habit into place again, and she grabbed her belt, which was still too long, slung her pack with her sewing gear around to the side, and sat down hard, right on the open points of her sewing shears. You can imagine when you're already depressed and hopeless and you've just sat on your scissors. And all she could do was sit there crying with her supervisor who had yelled at her over and over again, the only person there who had gone to call the ambulance. She was convinced all hope was gone. But her supervising nun came back and looked at her. And instead of yelling, she sat down with her and she just took her hand and she held it while they waited for the ambulance. And in that moment, Emily Louise realized how very connected she was to her friends and her order and even to her supervisor. And that life was more than just arguing about her belt. And in that moment, hope came back. And later in the hospital, as she recovered from the 30 stitches to her posterior, her supervisor showed up and Emily Louise thought she was going to be fired, but instead of firing her from the order, she was offered a position as the nun in residence at a children's camp where she could run and jump and have her head covering fall off often. And given dispensation to be the only sister of St. Margaret at the time who didn't have to wear a sewing bag or scissors. Hope isn't exotic or far away. It isn't rare or unusual or distant or unreachable. It doesn't depend on the whim of some possible vengeful deity. Hope is a condition of our existence. It's our job. It's the work of being human. The world goes on. Good things happen. Plants grow. Babies are born. Day and night follow one another. Sometimes bad things happen, fires and typhoons, doubts and plagues, and nature heats up and warns us that our connections are getting a little wobbly. And human beings rise up in response. We remember the angelic side of our humanity, and we rise up for all those who've been hurt. We rise up for those who have been pushed aside and broken down and told to be silent. We rise up for the poor and the tired. We rise up for the homeless and the angry and the refugee. We rise out and reach out to the victim. We call for help when we are the victim, and most of the time, someone's there. We don't always get it right. We don't always do everything we can, and some of us don't do anything. But our human nature calls to us in our bones to reach out and lend a hand. The joyous thing is that hatred has to be taught. It doesn't come naturally. Disconnection has to be learned. Life can be complicated, and sometimes how to help isn't clear. Sometimes we have to help ourselves first, and just staying alive requires all our attention. But we all seek connection to people or to nature or to God or a goddess. And all of these connections bring us back to hope, to the potentials that exist because we're part of something that is bigger than ourselves. Hope is alive. It moves between people. It runs through our web from the natural world to human beings, to the divine as we can imagine it, and back to human beings again. It's a gift we give one another and a gift we recreate over and over and over again. Hope isn't passive. To live in hope is part of us. It's an obligation we take on by being human, a responsibility we can't avoid, a responsibility to remind ourselves and others that we have a place, that we are connected to possibility. It's the very heart of who we are. When the worst in life happens, hope reminds you that there are others there to bring you home, to hold your hand, to light a lamp in the darkness and say, here's a path. Hope helps to spin the web of life itself. It's the glue that holds us together. It's our active pursuit of deepest humanity. Barbara Kingsolver said, the very least you can do in your life is to figure out what you hope for. And the most you can do is to live inside that hope. Not admire it from a distance, but live in it, under its roof. So live in hope. Trust me, it's a nice neighborhood. I'd like to take just a couple minutes now if anyone would like to share what brings you hope, what reminds you to live in hope. And so if I could have the, if you raise your hand, the ushers will bring you a microphone.
So for the past decade or so, I've been in various leadership positions with Hope Center in Waukesha. Serves the whole entire county, as everyone I think here knows. A lot of support from our congregation. I was also was involved in the decision to change the name of the organization from Cooperating Congregations of Waukesha County to Hope Center. To be more inclusive, and it was one of the big reasons. Hope Center has about more than 100 different churches throughout the county that support it. One of the slogans of Hope Center is "Be the Hope," and I think it really resonates with the idea that hope is, we are community and we make hope. I'm currently, and for the past few years, have been the chair of fundraising, responsible for raising through fundraisers $250,000 per year, which is a lot to do through fundraising. I pitch those things here regularly. We get a lot of support. Mm-hmm. But it's important to me to be able to take sort of the commercial out of it sort of, what do I get by going to this? Yeah, I get some beer, I get some wine. But that $250,000 is the bus that was mentioned in the story. People need it. We need to raise that money. We've got thousands of people in need telling us that what they need. I don't think it's for us to tell them, you need this. They need food, they need shelter, they need clothing for their families. And so thank you for your support for Hope Center. And again, this Thursday, see me.
Oh, this is Lynn. I love the book, Everyone Needs a Rock. I have a rock, I'll admit. but I also really appreciate this, the message of the sermon today, and hope is, we find hope through connection. And it's so funny because I just put a sign up for our church retreat, and it's, the theme is connect with yourself and with others, because I really feel we are, you know, a house of hope, and this will give us an opportunity that Saturday at the end of February to make some connections with our deeper selves and also with each other. So thank you.
Thank you, Amy. This is John, and I appreciate your message. And for me, hope it's not too trite or simple, but hope to me is necessary, because the alternative is despair, and that's much worse.
Thank you, John, for that lead-in. Those of you who know me, I mean, last year was tough for me, and many people here, Rick, Carol, others, took me out to lunch, you know, and it's good to have hope back, because when it's not there, it's despair, and it's very dark.
Hi, it's Barb. I used to hope because I wanted hope to change things. Now I have hope to accept what's happening and to use it to further my spiritual growth and to help other people. Thank you, Amy. Beautiful sermon.
This is Gus. Hope is something I do. And when I do, I make hope.
I'm Sarah Hudson. And I just want to say how important it has been for Bud and me to be a part of this hopeful congregation that is very inspiring as well as supportive. Thanks.
This is Fran, and I find hope in my travels, meeting incredible people in other cultures. And I was in Rwanda by myself for about a week this past summer. Amazing, 21 years after this horrible genocide, where in less than a month, more than 1 million people were slaughtered with machetes and bludgeoned to death. And I met such incredible... There isn't an art museum, but there are 4 galleries. I went to them, filled with love and hope in the paintings on the walls. I met a Turkish doctor. She works for an NGO, Women's Healthcare in Rwanda. And the things she told me, gosh, in Rwanda, when there's a project, once the stakeholders agree, nothing stops them. They do what needs to be done. Met another woman doing her senior thesis, an African-American woman, senior at Princeton. Her thesis was on Rwanda's parliament. Highest percentage of elected women parliamentarians on the planet. And the poverty is extreme. Traveled all throughout the country. And I must say, whether it's Europe, countries in Africa, that brings me hope, meeting people when I travel alone who are so loving, compassionate. It brings me hope. Thank you. And thank you, Amy, for a wonderful sermon.
This is Betsy, and after our house fire in August, that really gave me a lot of hope in human nature, because the community response was incredible. We had neighbors we didn't know very well washing our sooty clothes for the following week, and Mike's family divvying up, helping us get what we needed right away. And just so many offers of help, and even people we didn't know in the neighborhood giving us things, and a little boy in the neighborhood collecting change from his friends to help us out, just gave me great hope that when bad things happen, people come together for good.
I found so much hope in... My daughter's 25, and I'm going to school, and the people that age, I just find so much hope in around me every time I talk with them, and that gives me an awful lot of hope. They just seem to be taking up the banner of making a better world, a lot of them.
Hi, I'm Tony. In addition to some of the things mentioned, I find a lot of hope in nature, whether I'm hiking or doing something with somebody or just with myself. The irrepressibility of it, the moss in the winter, whatever, you know, it's just right there at all times.
Thank you all so much for sharing today. Amen.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn, number 1028, Fire of Commitment.
Special verse that we'd like to sing. So if you would be so indulgent and allow us to do the first verse and chorus by ourselves, then come in on verse 2. Be wonderful. Thank you.
Spirits into faith set free from fear. When
May hope surround and sustain you. May love support you, and may joy embrace you. Peace, and may it be so.